This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the heart of Manhattan at Rockefeller Center, New York City, Newsstand Studios. Joined as usual with John right in front of me. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Yeah? Got Joe Hazen rocking the panels over here. What's up?
Hey, how's everyone doing?
Doing all right, doing all right. We got Nastasia the Hammer Lopez holding it down in Los Angeles. What's up?
Not much. How are you?
Fine. We don't know where Jackie Molecules is. He's MIA as of now, but we're trying to get a hold of him. And in the upper left, we got the Quinn. What's up? How's Vancouver Island these days?
It's good.
Yeah. So, just get this out of the way first. We started delivering the Spinzols, and so I've been looking at people's unboxing videos, and so far, so good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're the customer service guy, Quinn. Anyone, it's been smooth sailing so far?
Yeah, nothing major.
Yeah. You know, in the next iteration, maybe we can put some lithium ion batteries in them so that they're even more of a pain in the butt to ship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what you, oh my God, speaking of which, this is not like one of our subjects, but did you guys see that insane Key Bridge video?
Nuts. Absolutely crazy.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. Because it's like such a crazy like display of physics. You know, you hit one small area of this bridge and then like a 1.6 mile bridge just goes boof into the water like instantly. It's horrifying. Horrifying.
Yeah.
Jackie Molecules, we got Jack on. What's up, man?
From D.C. at that.
Oh,
so
my God.
People are freaking out about that over here.
I'm sure they are. It's
actually
horrible.
Yeah. I had a recording from I was going to do with somebody that was coming in from Baltimore, and that was why things got kind of wacky today. They're not coming in. Everything was screwed up over there. And Yeah.
Well, I mean,
stuff.
That there's like millions of cars of traffic on that bridge. Apparently, like, shipping and traffic in that area is going to be, aside from whatever loss of life there ends up being, it's just going to be a nightmare for like at least a year and a half, right?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Oh, never seen anything like it. Man, I wonder how much money Maersk is going to have to pay. Yeah. They're the ones that contracted the boat. And you say, my God, it's so unbelievable. Something that slow. Take out a whole bridge. Yeah, but.
Yeah, still.
Take out a whole bridge.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hey, Jack, I'm glad you're on because guess what? Nastasia, you might be interested. This is up Nastasia's alley, kind of. So guess whose 60th birthday it is in May, who's performing a concert. I'll just tell you because it's too boring for you to guess. Maynard Keenan from Tool is turning 60.
Yeah.
He owns a winery.
Oh, boy.
He owns a winery. He's not playing with Tool, but he's playing with Perfect Circle and you know, Pussifer, however you pronounce, you know, that Lucifer Puss mix band that he has.
Yep.
And
yep.
Primus with Les Claypool, who also owns a winery. So two of the wineries that we had on John's least favorite episode of Cooking Issues ever, the wine episode, are going to be playing a concert together for a birthday in May. Imagine if we could get them in, do a wine thing with Maynard and freaking... And Les Claypool.
Nastasia's head would explode if Maynard came on the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, Nastasia, you'd like it. You know, he's a Krav Maga. He's a black belt and not Krav Maga, Gracie. He could rip my head off. You would enjoy it. What? It's in May. You might be back even.
No, I'm already going to their show at the Hollywood Bowl in April.
Yeah, but this is a special birthday round robin with Maynard and Primus constantly.
I know. He's celebrating the birthday here, but whatever.
They're also doing one here in Brooklyn, where we happen to record the show. I'm saying.
Then, yes, contact them.
You're the one that's the queen of contacting, like, people that we don't know and saying, we used your wines before on a show. Are you interested in doing it again? Something like this. You know what I mean?
I've contacted him before in, like, 2019. Remember?
No. And were they like, no thanks? But they're going to be here, though. That's the thing. I'm saying we don't even need them. We just have the wines and we can drink it in their honor or whatever, you know? That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all I'm saying. And we say, you know, we say good things about Les Claypool's wine, Claypool Vineyards. We said nice things about it, you know? And I say very nice things about Early Primus. What?
Have you tasted both of their wines?
I can't remember whether, because Maynard's wines are out of like Sedona, right, or something. They're out of Arizona.
Arizona.
I don't remember whether we had those. I've had Claypool stuff. I thought it was good. Those are as it was. And you know, the sommelier who is a former Blue Man, I think, seemed to like it. So you know, get a som on, get some, you know, do Rockstar Wines times, you know, whatever, second edition, and then maybe John will like it better if he's here and not having to listen to it from home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was also saying to before we started the show with Joe that I missed Purim this year. I have not had a Hamantash, and he says it's not too late. You can get one this weekend. And we were saying, what's the Hamantash that you guys like the most? What size? What flavor?
Apricot for myself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah? You know why? That's the one that tastes the best. But I do like the poppy crap, too, even though it doesn't taste the best. I like the texture of the
raspberry's
poppy crap.
Raspberry's good.
Yeah?
I had apple not long ago. It was delicious.
What? Who's heard of an apple Hamantash? Like, what?
Exactly.
But it was good?
Delicious.
They dope a little acid into that? So it wasn't like...
A couple worms.
Mm-hmm. So listen, not that kind of acid, John. Freak. So what size Hamantash are you talking about? You like the ones, the giants, the tinies, somewhere in between?
I find the big ones are just a little too much dough and not enough fruit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know why? Because they... I don't know why they don't lower the They should increase the center ratio, make the center like flatter but bigger.
Wider, yeah.
Yeah, wider but not tall. I don't need that much
crap. Yeah, but not taller, but like diameter-wise, if I don't, yeah.
Yeah, because the edge of that tri-corner hat on that Hamantan, dry.
Very dry.
Dry.
Haman.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he's a bad dude. Right. You know what I mean? He's a bad dude. You know what I mean? Yeah. So who makes the best one that nowadays, like Moishe's where I used to go is closed. At least the original, the one on Second Avenue, there's one over by my house, but I don't go to that. Who makes the Hamantash to beat now, Joe?
I, you know what? I don't know. I'm a bit of a Hamantash and
wow.
Yeah.
Like, take no, all comers.
Like no matter how bad it is, it's still kind of good.
Yeah. As Nastassi would say, just like her grandma, let anybody in. Yeah. Literally. She said that. When Cliff and became our intern, she turned around, looked at him, and said, "We're just like my grandma now. We let anybody in." And everyone in the room was like, "What?" Remember that stuff? That was classic.
That's so
wrong. I love it. Oh, guess what? Guess what it is this weekend? This weekend is my birthday. But since it's Easter, right? My family, when they came over for family dinner, they made me a birthday cake, and it was freaking awesome. Miley Carpenter, she, you know, was been on the show. So in my family, we use a lot of canned whipped cream, right? And recently I started calling it spray cream, and everybody now in the family gaslight. So one half of the family is gaslighting the other half of the family, saying that we always called it spray cream. And so we're trying to propagate spray cream as what we call it. So Miley makes this cake, covers it in spray cream, then Ridge, my other sister-in-law, buys a can of Cabot's, you know, from Trader Joe's Cabot's whipped cream, remakes the label to say spray cream, and on the back, like, changes all of the, like, logos where it says how to do it. It's like... as putting it directly in your mouth, spraying it, because, you know, me and my niece, my third grade niece, we always have it in the fridge for her. I always have at least two cans in case one runs out, and we're always taking hits the right way, upside down, whipped cream, not nitrous hits, you know, taking a hit off the spray cream. And so she just redid the whole label and says ingredients, spray cream. It's like, and I'm going to post it later, but it was great. It was a great birthday. And also yesterday, more food-related crap, I went to Mush, had another dinner at Bar Balut, which I haven't been to Bar Balut in a million years.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Well, AJ, you know, who's the chef at AJ Schaller, was at Cuisine Solution, which is Bruno Gusseau's McGillicuddy. She moved to Mush. By the way, Quinn, they didn't change their name is still Mush, i.e. Mushroom. Kind of an unfortunate name, right? But their shtick is that they grow mycelium without making fruiting bodies. And so instead of having like 65-75% of the biomass be stuff that you can't eat, they invert that ratio. And so now you can eat like 65-70% of the biomass that's created. So it's just much more efficient at creating fungal biomass, and they can do any like a bunch of different flavors. So they had another dinner. So they have a new trademark queen called 50 Cut. Now here's what I don't understand. See what you guys think. I want your input. What they believe is that the way that they're going to sell the most of this stuff is, and by the way, they can do it without light. So it's a lot also less energy intensive than growing fruiting bodies, which require like some light because they grow up towards, because they're meant to grow outside. Anyway. So, what they want you to do with it is they chum it up, they make adduct cells, they par dehydrate it, so there's zero shrinkage. So what you're buying is roughly, I think, wholesale $4 a pound. It's pre-cut, it's pre-shrunk down, ready to rock and roll. They want you to mix it in at about a 50% ratio with meat in things like farces, like we talked about last week, or so they make like pâtés and stuff.
Are they working with La Frida? I just got a sample the other day of a 50-50 blend of mushroom beef.
In fact, they are.
Yeah, there we go.
La Frida, like, so that's the thing, 50 cut. Or they're making hamburgers that are 50% beef, or they're mixing it with anything else. But my issue is, what I'm trying to understand is that in a restaurant environment, you don't shrinkage, believe it or not, people who are at home, think about this, who don't work professionally. We, in the business, sell you a hamburger based on the raw weight, right? So we say it's a quarter pound burger. We don't mean after it's cooked. We don't care how much it shrinks, right? We're selling you on a number, and then if it shrinks to zero, it shrinks to zero. What do I care? You know what I mean? I told you how much raw meat I put into it, and that's it. You know what I mean? So, like, the fact that it doesn't shrink as much, the two advantages they have is that it doesn't shrink as much. It, you know, it tastes good because they're mushrooms. Mushrooms are considered a high-value item. So it's not like filling it with breadcrumbs or something like this, which is considered an cheapening agent. And the other benefit that they talk about, but not maybe as much, is you can hammer the hell out of the burger, and the mushroom never gives up its moisture. So even when you viciously overcook the meat, like just hit it with a dead blow until it cries for mercy, right? The mushrooms aren't going to give up all their liquid until they're literally freaking, like, dehydrated, right? So that's another advantage. But I just don't know how many Americans are going to understand I don't understand how it's going to be written on a menu. How many Americans are going to be like, you know what I want? I want half the – in other words, like, I want to decrease my carbon footprint by half. I think it's like most people are going to be like, I either want full-on no animal or I want my full-on animal. I just don't know how the market is going to work. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess for me, if there was a full beef burger on the menu and then that, I'd probably go for a full beef.
Right. What if there was a mushroom burger where they're selling it's mushroom, but then you're only going to sell a certain number of, like, mushroom beef. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you're doing a Wellington, you should buy these for your duck sales all day, every day. You don't have to chop and saute all that stuff. Think of, like, all the time, like, all the space for the raw mushrooms and all the washing and all the chopping, all that garbage. They just hand you these things, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you toss them in. You know, that's a good, you know, at $4 a pound, that's, by the way, $4 a pound for, they can do lion's mane duck sales. They can do, like, oysters. I think they do oysters, lion's mane, chanterelle, and shiitake. Mm-hmm. And you can do blends, which is nice.
That is?
Yeah, so far. And cordyceps, they say it's disgusting. It tastes real bitter. You know what I mean? And for when it's legal, you know, wacky mushrooms. Although, can you cook a psilocybin mushroom?
I don't know. I've heard no, but I don't know.
I've heard no. I've never tried it, but I've heard that you can't. Anyway. So that's where I was last night. Wow. Man, talk to Les Claypool about it. If he comes on, we can talk to Les Claypool.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. you know, maybe that's why I never got into later Primus, because I'm just never on mushrooms. You know?
Could be.
They did stop making songs at a certain point, and it just turned into, like, psychedelic jams.
Yeah. Yeah, which isn't my... It's not my cup of tea. You know what I mean? Thank God they're not doing that with their wines.
Your mushroom tea.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine if they treated their wines the same way. Ugh. Anyway. All right.
As long as they're not playing like those long jams like Fish.
But they are. But
are they really that long? Like playing like Florida Everglades for 24 hours?
But it's like a whole album, and it's just like... And then more of that. You know what I mean? I'm like, what, dude? You're incredibly talented. What? You know what I mean? All right. What about you? Anyone else? I spent this whole time talking about my food wackiness this week. What do you guys got?
Okay. I met up with Richie Sunday with Catherine Piccoli and Kate Dobday.
Oh, nice. For those of you who don't know, that's our CookQuest, Mr. Koji himself.
That's right.
Yeah. And an engineer.
And an engineer, true. Yeah.
And I guess proud Boston resident?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. So what's up? What's up with Rich?
No, it's great. He was showing some of his friends around from Taiwan while he was here. So taking them to a bunch of good eateries and other good.
Did they go to your eatery?
They did not.
Oh.
I know. Totally offended.
Well, that's so burned.
It's fine.
So burned.
I think he was taking them to places that were doing a lot of like Koji kind of work. They went to one sake producer.
So it was more of a rebuke.
I suppose so, yes.
Yeah.
But no, it's really interesting to hear what he's been up to, what the kind of stuff he's trying to do with Jeremy Umansky down in Cleveland. He's got the Koji Alchemy book coming out in Japanese soon, which he's very excited about. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So it's good. We had good brunch at a place called Leyland in Brooklyn. Recommend anyone go in there if they're in that neighborhood near Park Slope.
So if you want Rich to come to your restaurant in the future, what would a Belgian take on Koji be?
I have no idea. I was thinking about that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
How do you even, like, is Koji in French?
Well, obviously you've got to make a bunch of waffles, grill Koji on them, and then make a miso.
That would be pretty wild.
Yeah, but like, you know, what, you use like the trash waffles, the ones that are left over to grow the stuff on? I mean, like, Belgian waffles are a thing of, like, different styles of Belgian waffles are a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Do you include, like, the crispy, like, the ones that are more speculoos related in the waffle family or not?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's not the same use case.
No.
Like, I could legitimately be like, do I want Brussels or do I want Liège right now?
Yeah.
Even though I think they're also a different use case because I'm not picking up ever. I could pick up a Liège waffle and walk down the street and eat that sucker, right?
Not doing that with the Brussels.
Not doing that with the Brussels.
Yep.
You want that on a plate.
Yep.
What do you think about putting so much powdered sugar on something that you choke when you eat it?
Not a fan.
Not a fan?
No.
Yeah. I'm also not because I never grew up enough to not inhale as I was eating. You know what I'm saying?
Do they make, like, savory waffles?
Not classically. I'm sure there are places that do riffs on it. I know, like, Waffles and Dingus here in the city, you know, throws pulled pork on it and does some other things
I'm
like
sure
that.
Fine.
But yeah, exactly. But
yeah, like the Italians do, like, those, like, meat donuts.
I mean, the thing about a Liège waffle specifically is that I don't want anything on it.
Yeah. No, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, because the reason I'll say this why is because, like, the texture difference between the inside and the outside is what it is. And if you put something on it, suddenly the entire thing would become too heavy. It goes from being this thing that's perfect to something that's
the, like, third element, the crunch of the pearl sugar.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's like, it's, I don't want to. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to top something, Brussels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
How the hell did we get on that? Oh, Rich.
Talking about Rich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because Quinn said you were going to start growing Koji on waffles.
Yep.
Now, what about, you don't even have the right waffle maker, you jerk.
I don't. Yeah.
Hey, listen, someone offered to buy mine on Twitter. You want to borrow it?
Maybe.
For the restaurant?
Potentially, yeah.
But if you're going to use it in the restaurant, Ray Waffles, if he's alive, if not, rest in peace, Ray Waffles. But if Ray Waffles is still alive on Staten Island, he can swap that to 220 for, I think he said, like a couple $100. He could swap it to 220. And the advantage, if we can keep the 120 so that if I ever get it back, I have 120, in a restaurant, you really want that thing to be 220.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it makes just as good a waffle off of a 120, but it's not boom, boom, boom,
yeah, exactly.
Boom,
just
boom.
Pump them out.
Yeah, yeah. And no one wants to sit around.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I also have like 15 pounds of Belgian pearl sugar in my house.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
For testing. Belgian pearl sugar, don't substitute something else. Please don't.
No.
Just don't be a dunce. Don't think that because, if you've been there and had the real ones and you come home and you're like, I want to do something different, fine. Because that's your choice.
Yeah.
You were born as a human. You can do what you like. But don't think that somehow if you haven't had it in the real place that you can make a substitution and it's just as good until you've had the real one, then make your own. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You got to understand what you're, I don't know, the beginning to go yeah. from there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. All right, Quinn, what do you got? You said you got some stuff. You've been cooking?
Yeah, I mean, nothing too exciting. My dad got a new, cast iron flat top that goes on the gas grill. So we did a whole, diner fest. We had, bacon sausage. I did some sourdough pancakes because, of course, I had to, do something weird. Mm. But they're really good, actually.
Well, sourdough pancakes are traditional.
Yeah.
I mean, hyper-traditional. You know, especially in the old days, American, West Coast, specifically sourdough pancakes used spent, and then they use baking soda as the actual leavener. So the traditionally American sourdough pancakes, you're not using bacterial leavening or really yeast leavening. It's just acid leavening, acid-based leavening off the sourdough. But do you like them? They're real stretchy, right? When they're that acid, when they're traditionally made like sour as all get out, they're kind of,
Yeah, these were not super sour. I did use my discard and then, extra dairy, extra flour. I did actually do a little bit of baking soda to neutralize it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then I did let it ferment for a few hours. But yeah, they were good.
Yeah. I love yeast. I love yeast risen pancakes. Oh my God. Yeast risen pancakes and yeast risen waffles. That yeasty flavor. Mm-hmm. Like a real, Brussels. It's not chemically leavened. That's real. Man. Yeast is good. People hate on yeast. All the sourdough weasels hate on yeast.
Yeah.
Yeast is good. SAF Red. By the way, I don't have any dislike. I don't have any love for French companies. Some exceptions, right? I don't have any love for them. I don't have any hate for them. I don't have any love for them. I'm not a Francophile. I'm not like my man John here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But SAF, the yeast corporation, just beats the pants off of us. You know, I mean, Fleischmann, I should love Fleischmann. That's our yeast, man. That's right around here. That's Eastern Seaboard, New York yeast, Fleischmann's. Mm-hmm. Or Red Star, or one of these other good old American yeasts. But just SAF just blows the pants off of them. And it's freaking cheap. You buy the brick of SAF, keep it in your fridge.
Yeah.
I'm a red man. I don't do a lot of red, I don't do a lot
I
of gold.
Prefer, yeah, I prefer the gold.
Why? You do a lot of sweet
then,
bacon?
Then you have the option of doing a brioche or a...
Here's a secret. Red works in brioche. I do it all the time.
You
like your high osmolarity? Ideal. Quinn's a high osmolarity kind of a guy.
Again, the high osmolarity yeast still works when it's not high osmolarity.
Have you done a side-by-side of a regular bread with SAF Red and SAF Gold? I would like to see it. I'm not saying you have not done it. I'm curious because I would like to see it.
I have not done it.
All right. So you don't know whether it works as well in a regular bread. I buy the one that's optimized for the crap that I do every day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, but I would like you should run the test. I'll tell you what, Quinn. We'll spring for a container of red, and you can do a side by side. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, I'm also doing. Well, again, I haven't used yeast for a few batches. Actually, I made the switch to non-hybrid fermentation.
To what? Oh, you mean all sourdough?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know what? I don't have patience for that. You know, I used to do that. I have to treat this sourdough like it's a pet or like it's a baby. And if I don't feed it right and then it gets all whacked out, to hell with that. I'll tell you something else. I tried the same thing. You know what's even harder to maintain in a normal house if you don't have the bran pickle. So obviously I have a crap ton of bran in my house, bran. So I have gallon containers of bran trying to figure out something I can do with it. I tried to make all bran cereals. You know what they did? They sucked. They were terrible. If you want your mouth to taste like sawdust, then you should do an entire only bran cereal. You know what I'm saying? It's nasty. You know, unless I guess I could dope the hell out of it with sugar. But anyway, so I tried making bran pickles with it, and they tasted great. Until all of a sudden those ferments decided to go wild, and then the whole house smells like poison, and the veg smells like poison. It's like, I can't get it to work. You know what I mean? I can't get it to work long term. But there's people in Japan who've been keeping their Nuka pickles alive for like a generation. But you know what I don't have for that? Patience. It's why we've killed every bonsai we've ever tried to grow. My man John likes bonsais.
I do, but haven't tried growing in a long time. Huh, too bad, Dex.
Yeah, it's dead. So John, I was like, John was like, why don't you start one from seed? And I was like, oh, it takes too long. And he's like, that doesn't have meaning. He's like, you're like, bonsai is the practice, right?
Yeah, that's the point. Like, the bonsais take forever. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong endeavor, Dave.
Yeah, the Brooklyn guy who's affiliated with the Botanical Garden over there, and Brooklyn Botanical Garden has an amazing bonsai collection, by the way, if you ever go out to the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. Like, amazing bonsai collection. It's not always on display. Dax buys one. He's young. Dax is like, how long will this live? He's like, I don't know, 800 years if you treat it right. and it was dead within a year, you know.
Yeah.
Dead. And then he was saying that, like, all the ones that you get at, like, Home Depot or on the street are already dead. They just don't know it yet. He's like, the roots have already dried out once, so they're still green. He's like, but they're dead. Huh. Yeah. Anyways. Bonsais. What about you, Stas, or Jack? You got any food crap? Oh, what? What'd you say, Quinn? What do you got?
Well, no, I wanted to give a little shout-out to the Patreon, because I didn't cook it this weekend, but I did upload a Patreon-exclusive yogurt gelato recipe for patrons.
Does it have God's Honest cream in it as well, or no?
Again, it's an adjustable recipe, so you can tweak the fat content. You can tweak the fat content of the yogurt, and it will adjust with either additional cream or milk, depending on the yogurt.
So I'm of that generation where everyone tried to get us to eat frozen yogurt instead of ice cream. And my take was always, frozen yogurt can be a delicious product. It is a product. It exists. Just don't call it ice cream. You know what I'm saying? It's
This is not frozen yogurt.
No, I'm not talking about yogurt. I'm not talking about yogurt. I'm thinking in general. And so, like, I am triggered by. I need to refresh my memory, because I don't think people try to do that anymore. I don't think people try to pass off frozen yogurt. It's yogurt. Can you believe it? I'm like, yes, I can, because it tastes like yogurt. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, but so this is a gelato with the tang of yogurt, is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Yeah. You try it with other yogurt similar things like creme fraiche?
Yeah. But again, I ran a test of unstrained yogurt and centrifuged yogurt.
Centrifuged yogurt is so good on its own. I've never used it in a recipe, but you know, you labnify that yogurt and it's like, it's like Greek on Greek, baby. It's so dense. So, you know who's got the best? Just walk into a store and buy Greek yogurt in New York City that I know of is the International Grocery on 9th Avenue and like 41st Street. They also have the best I've ever had, tiramisu salata, like hands down, like straight spoon. I mean, bread is still nice, but it's just like their tiramisu salata is just off the charts good. You know what I mean? Anyway, so you know what I'm disappointed by? Creme fraiche. Here's why. Tastes good. Such a pain in the butt, because it goes super thin when you're working with it, and then you have to wait for it to set up.
Yeah.
And then if you put it on something too hot and you don't stabilize it, it weeps out. It's just so good and so disappointing at the same time. You know
I
what
agree.
I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and then nobody wants to get like a hyper, like hydrocolloided out creme fraiche that won't weep, because they want creme fraiche to be creme fraiche and not creme stabilized. You know what I mean? But it's like, I don't know. Someday someone will crack that. You know?
Hopefully.
I just use it whenever, like instead of sour cream, I pretty much only use it as a topping or, like, a last-second finisher.
Right, but, I mean, the problem is if you're doing that at home, do whatever you want, but, like, when you're doing it onto a plate, if there's any hot food anywhere near it, you get that... that, you know, running pile of, you know, whey crap water, coming. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, and then you look like a jerk. You look like a moron. And, it's the mental equivalent of when you don't squeeze the spinach after you cook it and you bring it to the table with that like grayish black water oozing out of your pile of spinach. So the worst would be unsqueezed spinach and like creme fraiche and then like a dry potato. Like a dry potato. Like, that's the nightmare of all. You're like, thanks. And then, you know, some sort of overcooked meat product that's not cut 50% with mushrooms to bring it all back to the beginning. what about you, Jack? You always have something. You always went out somewhere that was disappointing.
when Stas takes me, no, just kidding. Well, two things. We went and supported Ariel for her book launch, which was great. And then I DJ'd at Thunderbolt for the after party, and that was great.
Oh, is that the time Nastassi was there as well?
She was there, yeah.
Nice. So you can both talk about it. Great. So Nastassi has something to talk about with you. Great. Let's do it.
Well, we also have the following night, we hung out at my place with Eliza, my girlfriend, and Nastassia, and we got Night Market, which was great. And we watched, get this, the 1997 MTV Video Music Awards that I had taped as a kid on VHS.
Oh, my God.
And my mom digitized for me on a DVD.
Okay, so
we watched it in its entirety with local Long Island commercials.
Oh, my God. Nastassia was in heaven. She loves a local commercial from Long Island more than I think anything else on earth. 1997, the hair must have been amazing. Hold on. But before we go further into it, because I want to hear Nastassia and your take on the VMEs in circa 1997. What year did your mom digitize it?
Recently.
Okay. Oh, my God. VCR tapes have degraded so much. How many lines of TV resolution was there? Like four? Like how much snow was there in the thing?
Bad.
And was the sound like how did it sound?
The sound was so warbly that we thought some singers were terrible, and then we realized, oh, the VHS is probably warbly.
Oh, yeah.
They're not that out of tune, you know?
Yeah, VHS degrades like a mother, and I don't even think that people's dub decks now are as synced up as they used to be. People used to, like... Anyway, okay, so now describe the event. What did you eat with it? Did you have were you eating or drinking something interesting?
A large spread from Night Market.
Oh, yeah, Night Market.
The restaurant.
I haven't been to Night Market in years. Still going strong?
Still strong, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any highlights from the 1997? What was 1997? What was winning in 97?
So get this, the video of the year was Virtual Insanity from Jamiroquai.
Oh, my God.
And the director of that video is also the director of Zone of Interest, the Academy Award-winning film from this year about the Holocaust.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now instead of, like, the backgrounds of screaming and all that, I'm just going to have Jamiroquai in my head if I ever see that movie again. That was That was a tough movie. Because, like...
It was.
That's a weird movie, Zone of Interest. Anyway, wow. So what else? What non-Jamiroquai-related stuff was winning in 97?
Does your favorite won an award?
I think our favorite part was Marilyn Manson performed at the very, very end. It was amazing. It was incredible.
Yeah. Are you still allowed to like him? I mean, you know, you can do what you like. But in other words, it's like, is he been across the board canceled or no?
No, I bought Jack the book. It's coming Wednesday, Jack.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jack's like, thanks. All right. Okay.
Get this. Yeah. There was a commercial, like a promo, because MTV had just Times Square, and they're doing all these commercials on the street for an interview in this commercial, but none other than our 45th president of the United States, who goes on some rant about MTV and then looks at the camera and says, "And another thing, Hanson blows."
Hanson blows. Oh, poor Hanson. Hanson is actually, what, two people or three people? How many Hansons?
Three
Hansons. But they're all the same person,
they also,
right? Are they all the same?
I don't know. I mean, no. I don't think so. They all had, like, different things going. Then they made beer, actually, at one point, and they called it hops.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, you poisoned my mind, you son of... Mhops. Oh, is that real or are you just poisoning my head, dude?
No, it's real. It's real. Go to HansonBrothersBeer.com. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, my God. Where do they live? Where is this beer? Can we get this beer? Oh, God.
Let's see.
Speaking of beers, you know how I love a 7 ounce pony beer? There's a cream ale that's only in the middle of the country that comes in a 7 ounce pony that looks sick, but no one ships it here. I want that. You like cream ale? Like Genesee?
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, it's whatever. I just like the word. I like saying Genesee cream ale. I went to the brewery and had it there. And I was like, this is fun because it's right at the waterfalls, at the Genesee Falls. So, Nastassia, what was your favorite Long Island local commercial?
There wasn't any standout. I mean, there was like, why go to New York when you can buy your suits in Merrick?
Whoa.
And you're like, true. Why go to New York when all of your soups can be had in Merrick? It's true. It's true. Yeah. You know? Come to the church and pick it up. Hey, but that's I told everyone knows this who listens to this show regularly. Nastassia streams in Los Angeles, the local. So if you live in the part of Long Island that's directly across from Stamford, she can tell you which church basement to go to pick up your sausage and pep. Right? Right,
Stassia? Yeah, I know where everyone needs to pick up their Easter lamb this Sunday. But...
Oh, my God, I wish I haven't had baby lamb in so long. That used to be like a family tradition. So, you know, my stepfather's father, Papa, was a butcher. And he used to get the baby lamb, like, you know, oh, God, baby lamb at Easter. One year I did baby goat because I couldn't get the lamb. Oh, my God, baby lamb. So where do you go in Long Island to pick up your lamb?
No, I don't know. But I listen because I can hear, like, how badly my house is getting pounded with all your freaking storms out there and rain. So that's part of why I listen.
But don't you have someone living there, right? So like, it's not like you would show up and it's wiped off the planet.
Yeah, but she's like, complain. And I'm like, how bad is it? Guess it's bad.
You're like, you're on the water with nothing.
Yeah.
Literally 0 inches between the water and the thing, there's like a couple of rocks in front of like, there's like riprap in front of the house. And then it's the Long Island Sound. It's going to be windy. It's going to have some stuff like that. It's not sheltered. If you want sheltered, you should be somewhere else. Am I wrong about this, Stas?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, someone goes to a metal concert and is like, it's so loud. Yeah. Yeah. It's a metal concert, you idiot. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What's wrong with you? People. It says here, two things I should say. One, if you like this podcast, which I don't know, but if you do, give us a good rating on whatever, wherever you get your fine podcast, because it helps us out. Right, Joe? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, think about joining our Patreon and because we should talk about upcoming guests and why they should on the Patreon. For instance, you get Quinn's yogurt gelato calculator. You get the Key Lime Pie calculator. Quinn's a lover of calculators. I have to say this. Patreon people, if you want anything calculated and you want an interactive calculator, all you need to do is, like, give Quinn the notion that you want said calculator. And Quinn's like, I could do a calculator for that. Pretty much. Am I wrong about this, Quinn? Am I?
I mean, I feel like it made sense for the Key Lime, especially.
Yeah, but my point is that, like, things that need to be calculated on the regular, you like to make calculators for them.
I do.
Yeah.
And there's other exclusive recipes like your glass and spec.
Yeah, but not every person gets the Quinn calculators. You got to be on the Patreon to get the Quinn calculators. If you want the Quinn calculators, you got to be on the Patreon. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Fula is rescheduled for April 16th. And then we have, we got a double feature on April 16th. We're doing Sola and then a second full episode with Kevin Jung from NOMA.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to talk about NOMA projects. I'm going to try to ask him, what does it mean to close if you're not closing? What does that mean? Like, they just hired Magoya on as their pastry chef, right? So if you're closing your restaurant, why are you hiring a world-famous pastry chef? What's that all about? So that'll, you know, we'll talk about all of that and more when they're on. We should put out, because I think we could probably get more questions. We have the questions. If you put questions in for Sola before, we can do that again. We could always use more questions. And I promise that I will get to every question you have for them. So, you know, I'll just power through them real fast. You know what I mean? I'll just look, you know, John or someone will be here. It'll force me to power through them. Right?
Yeah. I can do that, yeah.
Power.
When is Pamela coming on?
That's not been set up, right? Yeah. Well, so for those of you that don't know, I'm just going to put this out there in case anyone out there can put pressure on her team. Pamela Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Pamela Anderson, her PR person reached out to Cooking Issues, and I think by mistake, and then was like, hey, by the way.
It was part of a collection of cookbooks, and one of them was hers.
Right. So it turns out she has a cookbook out now, right? And she's like doing really, really great stuff now. And she lives on Vancouver Island, right where Quinn lives. So what we want to do is we want to do the Cooking Issues Roadshow, where we show up in Vancouver Island, because she's all about like that Vancouver Island cooking, Vancouver Island life. She has some sort of like farm thing. I don't know, but
crazy,
you know. But as soon as we showed interest, they were like, "Oh yeah, no, sorry."
Well, I haven't heard back yet. Yeah, I gotta pork them again.
Yeah. That's yeah. Funny. Yeah. Anyway, or how did we come on that? How did they even show up? Who talked about Stas talked about it, right?
We're talking about guests.
Oh, guests. Well, this is a possible guest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Not confirmed.
Yeah.
But hopefully.
Yeah, far from confirmed. All right. So, Nastasia, you got anything else from VME or no?
No. I think that was it. Ariel had a good book party.
Yeah?
Sure, there was something. Yeah.
Was the book party... you said the after party was at Thunderbolt. Where was the initial party?
Some bookstore in Chinatown. I don't remember the name.
Bookstore.
Now Serving? Is it?
Now Serving.
Yeah.
Good
great
bookstore?
Book looks awesome.
Yeah? All right.
Oh, yeah.
Next time I'm in Los Angeles. Xander Emery writes in, I have seen food science articles describing using inert gases. By the way, when everyone says inert gas, the cheapest one is nitrogen. It's just nitrogen. Like no one's going out and buying argon for this because what pain? Argon, so expensive. I've been seeing food science articles describing using inert gases to purge dissolved oxygen from orange juice as a means of preservation and flavor stabilization. Is this worth doing for flavor with fresh juice before it's clarified? What about afterwards? All right. I tried it once, and I wasn't like, oh, this is great. And if you've read Ariel's book, which I recommend that everyone goes and buys Flavorama and reads the book, she talks about the difference between cooked citrus and not cooked citrus as being a flattening of it by getting rid of the volatiles. And what's happening when you're purging inert gas through it is not just removing oxygen, but in the technical term, for the gross technical term, and going back to the Hansons with the brewery, is sparging. So it's gas sparging. And if you read the patents on how to do it, which you can do it, they tell you exactly how much nitrogen you need to pump through it. It's 1 to 40. It's ridiculous. It's cubic feet per hour per gallon per minute, right? And you put it through. They even tell you where to buy the sintered metal like sparging things that you put your gas through. So it's easy enough to test. You know, I don't know how much it's going to cost in the long run, but with like if you have nitrogen already, or I guess you could use argon, but if you have nitrogen already. You can set a system up to test it for under like $100. I think it's going to flatten it out. So I think it might extend the life by reducing oxygen and by just making it taste overall crappier than before, but in a more stable crappy, right? So if your goal is to make something that lasts longer but is slightly crappier, then I would say maybe. But I never really gotten into it. Is that fine?
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys know anyone that's tried it that's loved it? Paul did some work. Paul Adams. Got to have him back on the show. He did some work with it. See what he says. But I actually wrote on the paper all the patent numbers, and they're just – even I am bored looking at them. So if I read them to you guys, you know, man. Ted Anderson writes in, hey, could you ask your brother-in-law is Wiley Dufresne from Stretch Pizza and WD-50, Alder and Dew's Donuts, and before that, 71 and Jean-Georges and blah, 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 FCI. Could you ask your brother-in-law what brand those dimpled pizza trays are that he served pies on at Stretch? Saw him featured on an Eater video, and the pizzas looked awesome. And the tray he serves them on seemed really smart. Large dimples to theoretically elevate the bottom a touch to encourage airflow and therefore to not sog out the bottom of the – presumably to not sog out. These are just for serving, not for cooking. Okay? He cooks them in a deck oven. Right? Okay. American Metal Craft. Ask and you shall receive. Nikki Sandwich. By the way, is Nikki like – are Nikki, are you a – are you an Italian-style sandwich or are you more a Spanish-speaking sandwich? Because there's two sandwich cultures and I'm not sure which sandwich you are. You know what I mean? You got to ask. Got to find out. I mean, they're both great. But this is for John.
Oh.
Your bread with steak tartare was nuts.
Oh, thank you.
Loved it. What butter and how do you toast it? Low or high temp, etc.
The butter is the Cabot unsalted butter. It's sourdough from a restaurant bakery supplier, Pain d'Avignon.
But I know those guys. Yeah. They sell to people.
Do they? Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. There you go. Room temp butter smeared on both sides of the bread. Light smear in a medium hot pan until you get the color you want. Flip it, and same thing until you get the color you want.
You salt it, though?
At the end, a little bit, yeah, obviously.
Hey, what salt do you use? Well, you're Malden, or are you flirt?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Well, do you like it when you get the – you buy it in the buckets, the big buckets, right?
Yeah.
For those of you that have never bought Malden in a big bucket, just get the big bucket. Just get the big bucket. You're going to use it. Unless you die, you're going to use it.
It's true.
And it's a lot cheaper. You know what I mean? And if you die, you don't care anyway. You're dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Get the big bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much cheaper. But do you guys like it when you get the giant
yes.
one? What do you do with it? You smash it or do you just look at it? What do you do?
I mean, I look at it and then I smash it. But
yeah.
I love – yeah. I think it's so cool, the shapes that they get – yeah, that you can find in those.
Yeah. Is there – like – I feel like, you know, that's the thing, like, you know, 20 years ago, the first time you have it, you're like, what? And then, like, it's never lost it for me. No one's ever come up with another salt where they're like, you're like, oh, Malden's so last century. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't happen. Malden's great.
Yep, true.
No?
Yeah.
Do you like, does anyone have any other salt shape that they like as much as Malden for what it does? Would you ever choose the Fleur de Sel? That style of like tiny, weird, semi moist, they're a pain to work
with.
It's a pain to sprinkle that stuff.
Yeah, clumps. And,
I mean, I like it theoretically. I liked it before I had Malden. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. But I mean, like,
yeah.
To use it?
Yeah.
Nah.
Is it like in the shape of like the fish food?
Which?
Like the Malden flakes?
Yeah. Yeah. But they're always pure, almost always like semi. Like hollow pyramidal, so they look like almost like if speaker cones were square.
Got it.
Yeah. But the pyramids are always very thin. So like unlike some of the Himalayan ones that are pyramidal but solid, this is too much. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to grind my salt.
Yeah.
Do you want to grind your salt, John?
No.
Grind your gears to grind your salt. You don't want to do that.
Exactly.
First of all, salt eats all grinders unless you only ceramic. You know, you're like it used to be back in the day before they had good ceramic burrs, that everyone would just throw away their salt grinders after a while because they would just get all
nastified. Yeah.
All right. So wait, what did you say? Low temp?
Medium high.
Medium high.
Yeah.
What does that even mean, though?
Like between, I guess, like 3/4 of the way the knob's open.
Let me ask you this. When you're doing it, like, are you slap testing it? That's how I test my pans. Does anyone still do that? When I want to see if my griddle is ready, I hit it with my hand.
I mean, I don't know. I just know that when I put the pan on, turn the gas on, by the time I'm done buttering the bread, it's ready to go where I need it to be. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right. Do you do the water thing sometimes when you're doing other things? Are you a water drop? I'm a water drop man for searing.
I have.
I look for the Leidenfrost.
Yeah.
When the Leidenfrost happens,
yeah.
It's time to sear, baby.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just before she starts smoking, just before your seasoning starts burning off. Don't you hate it? Don't you just hate it when you're drying your cast iron or black steel and you forget that you're drying it and you get drawn into something else and then the kitchen fills with smoke because you slightly overheated it. You haven't ruined the seasoning yet, but the whole house and you're like, I'm a jerk.
It's annoying,
Yeah, because it shows that you're a bad person. From Travis, do you know anything about the, in scare quotes, air hood? And what Travis is talking about is a device that it looks like the creature from Dune, and it like sits up and get like a big worm that sits up, and you put it next to your pan, and it's got a fan and a charcoal filter and a metal grease thing, and it's meant to reduce the amount of trash that you have floating around in, you know, because we all know your hood sucks, so it's meant to take care of that. It's a larger version of what soldering folks use to extract solder fumes when they're soldering. Think about it that way. No, I mean obviously I know about it. I looked into it. Booker and Dax once thought about building a different style of hood, and we thought a portable hood, and we thought better about it. We were going to do catalytic. We were actually going to burn the stuff that comes off, because if you next time you have, like if you're roasting coffee or something like this, if you just burn a really hot flame over, you like can burn all the smoke off. And so people make catalytic burners for fireplaces. So I wanted to do a catalytic hood, but, you know, we decided that we have enough problems making the things that we already make. And so I don't know. I haven't tested these guys, their hood, but I'm happy. Like if they want to send us one to test, I make plenty of smoke in my kitchen. So, you know. Happy to test it, but no, I.
There's my dad.
Yeah, well, you know, send us two. We'll take a look. We'll see. We'll see whether it's any good. Wimzerd writes in, fresh back from a trip to Oaxaca, and ready to continue a life of maize consumption. In the past, I've always made my masa from masa harina fresh for each meal. But being able to prep out a few days' worth would be very convenient. Has anyone messed with this and noticed any big changes in quality, fresh versus day old, day one versus day two? I mean, I've never pre-made masa harina, but I've used day old masa, like, you know, from nixtamalization. I've never kept it more than, I think, a day. And I'd say it's not as good day two, the machining properties. As long as it's not cooked, it still makes good tortillas. But, you know, the actual tortilla forming properties of it weren't as good day two from fresh masa. But I don't know if that's only with fresh masa as opposed, I mean, like, you know, from nixtamal, ground from nixtamal instead of, like, from masa harina. I don't know. Anyone here ever, you know, made masa harina and then kept it for longer?
Nope.
Stas, no. Your mom used to buy masa. How long would she be able to keep it?
They bought it day of and used it day of.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best. That's the best, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Sorry, Wismar. I don't know. I know that if you nixtamalizing is a pain if you have to do it yourself. So you can also freeze it. You know what I mean? But
you can?
Yeah.
I had trouble freezing it.
Fresh
one time I made. Yeah.
What happened? You ground it?
It just got really. Yeah. It got really crumbly. Oh, wait. No, I froze the masa. Does that make a big difference?
You mean what you're saying, freezing it before or after you grind it? I would grind it and then freeze it. You know what that tells? But how are you making it? How are you making the masa?
One time I made it. It was in a conch.
Yeah, I mean, if it's getting crumbly, my guess is that obviously there was some moisture loss on the freezing, right? Or the moisture wasn't fully distributed throughout the masa. The hydration wasn't fully all the way through it, and then it finished hydrating as it thawed and then needed more water. Were you able to bring it back by adding a little water?
It was like last year. I forget what we did.
I think you can freeze it. I'm pretty sure I've frozen it. Now you're making me question myself. I'm pretty sure I have frozen it because when we used to make it a lot at FCI, when I used to make it at home, you tend to make a lot because you don't want to make it again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like unless it's part of your daily routine. You know, in which case, it's your daily routine. But anyway, sorry. Sorry I don't have more on that. Mathman asks, is there a rule of thumb, Quinny Quinn, is there a rule of thumb to use sourdough discard as a flavorant and then yeast as a leavener? Would you take a typical bread recipe and then substitute 20% of the flour for discard, managing water appropriately? I know Dave mentioned this is how he makes bread nowadays. So I typically, I mean, I call it discard, but this is all I use now. So to call it discard is the way that I work now is I have the starter that's in my fridge, then I use some and then I replenish it and put it away. So I don't ever discard anything, but I call it discard because it's what the average person would call discard, because they would discard, refresh it, and then use the refreshed one, right? So let's be clear about the terminology here. So I would say that for roughly 500 grams of flour, I use somewhere in the area of, I would say, 130 to 160 grams of starter, which is, half of that is, it's 100%. So that's, roughly 70. Actually, I'd always do the calculation. It's always between 50 and 80 grams of flour for the 500, right, of starter flour. Does that make sense? It's always, and then I'm because I'm using all fresh ground stuff, I'm usually running at about 80% hydration. And of course, I take the starter into account. And then I just use a lot less yeast, right? It doesn't really matter if you're not using the starter as the prime leavener. It doesn't really matter how much. You can dial the yeast back, but it really depends on how fast you want the rise to be. But I peg the rise to the amount of yeast I add, and I almost ignore the leavening power of the starter, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? So, if you're running a recipe and you want that recipe to, let's say a recipe can go anywhere between a gram of yeast. So for 500 grams of flour plus starter, let's assume a starter had no activity at all. I could see a recipe being valid anywhere between 1 gram of yeast and 6 grams of yeast, depending on whether you want that thing to be able to ferment overnight without being refrigerated, or whether or not you want it to be done in 2 hours. So you have to mentally scale where you're putting the yeast. Does that make sense? Dr. Smokehouse, I'm building a facility for small 20-person dinners and food education events. Would like to go with an induction system. I plan to have a Breville control freak, but looking for a recommendation on a multiple burner setup. Dr. Smokehouse, I wish I could recommend something to you, but I've never used one that, it's been a long time since I've used Cooktex. So Cooktex used to be the ones we would always use, but I haven't professionally used one in a long time, and I will not recommend something that I haven't personally used. I recommend you find someone else in the neighborhood that has one that you can become friends with. See whether they like it. See what their problems are. Things to look out for, obviously. Does it have power? Does it ever break down, right? That's the thing that happens a lot. They break. And the last thing is does it make an annoying noise that's going to irritate your cooks, unless you don't care about your cooks, in which case, who cares? Adam says, good morning from Texas. I'm sure you meet people, but I met you at all the time. But I met you at San Antonio during Bar Smarts. I'm trying to figure out how to store cocktail pearls so I'm not having to make them on the fly during a busy shift. I want to make my bar, I want to make it in advance so I can spend more time on guest relations. Well, so the cheeky part of me wants to say, just don't use them at all. The easiest way to store them is in the trash can. However, if you want to use them, the trick with them is to have the sugar content of the liquid and alcohol content of the storage liquid be the same as the base pearl. This way they won't leak out. Also, if you're using alginate for your pearl and you want them to stay liquid, you have to use reverse alginate, and you have to put a little bit of calcium in the storage bath or they will disintegrate over time. If you tell me the exact chemistry you're using, I can give you a little bit more of a recommendation. Glenn, I only have 7 seconds to talk about rice washing. I don't think so. The thing is, here is you're putting raw rice into the mixing glass and you're stirring it and you're trying to do a form of rice washing, i.e., mellowing things like a Negroni. And the article you pointed me to from America's Test Kitchen, you know, they credit people at Leanda and like Shannon Ponche. I love Shannon Ponche. She, you know, she used to work at Booker and Dax. So if she says that it makes a better drink, it does. I don't think it's the starch. Starch is pretty inert. It's probably adsorption to the rice grains. This is an easy test to run if somebody wants to run it, but it's too complicated to talk to in the 0 seconds I have left. Maybe next time. Cooking Issues.